Upstairs, a vacuum cleaner was being run. Teo, do you personally give any credence to such a thing?
Do I think you are a peri spirit?
Teo smiled.
No.
Fletch said, Phew.
I worry that you won't know what to do about it.
What do I do about it? Teo hesitated a long moment.
I don't know either. Brazil is one of the most modern nations on Earth.
His voice dwindled off. I think I understand what you are saying, Teo. Fletch stood up. I promise I will think.
It's just that your father is not here.
I will think of a plan. In shaking, Teo held Fletch's hand a long moment.
The tap dancers, he said. Your father would not want you to become a tap dancer on life.
Chapter 10. Laura? The window drapes were open. The room had been made up. Fletch pushed the ajar door to the bathroom all the way open. Laura? There was a note for him on the bureau. Fletch, Otavio called. He is feeling too tired to stay for carnival in Rio. He wants to be home in Bahia. He said this morning he feels too tired to travel alone through all the carnival crowds, so I am helping him travel to Bahia. Surely I will be back Sunday, enjoy the Canecao ball tonight, even without me. If you get too lonely without me, I have left you Jorge Amado's Dona Flor and Her Two Husbands, a great Brazilian classic. And I will bring you a present from Bahia, something I want for you. Ciao, Laura. Across the utility area, the man was still painting the room. The phone rang.
Janio?
Not here at present.
Is Fletcher there?
Yes, he's here, I think.
Tonino Braga, Fletch.
How are you? Have you slept?
We thought you might like to spend the day with us. Drive up to a place we know in the mountains. Laura can go shopping.
Laura's gone to Bahia with her father.
That's well. Then will you come?
A place we know, very amusing, very relaxing. It is important to get away during carnival.
Tonino, I haven't slept. I went running.
This place is very relaxing. You can have a sleep there after lunch.
Teo da Costa is expecting me for the Canecao ball tonight.
Oh, we'll be back in plenty of time for that.
We are going to the ball, too.
Who's we?
Just Tito Norival, Orlando, and myself. Get away from the women a few hours.
I think I should try to sleep.
You don't understand.
I don't understand anything.
We are downstairs in the lobby, expecting you.
Tonino,
you will come?
Fletch looked at the freshly made bed.
A preciso terno?
Such was a tourist joke. In Brazil, a suit was never necessary.
You will need no clothes. Do you have money?
Fletch felt the wad of cruceros in his pocket he had taken out of the hotel safe for Joan Collins Stanwyck.
Yes. Good. Bring your money. We will gamble. We will gamble and take your money away from you.
Okay. You coming right down?
Yes.
You didn't say that.
I'll be right down.
Before leaving the telephone, Fletch called the Hotel Jangada and asked for room 912. There was no answer. He took a full liter of mineral water from the bathroom. Before leaving the hotel room, Fletch checked under the bed. The frog was still there.
Chapter 11.
Bum bum, Tonino said.
The black four-door Galaxy was on the sidewalk close to the hedge in front of the Hotel Yellow Parrot. Around it, dressed only in shorts and sunglasses, were the tap dancers. Norival, the only one with his belly hanging over his belt, held a can of beer in his hand.
Bon dia, Fletch, Tito said.
Tem dinero?
Tito grinned. E para uso pessoal?
In front of the hotel, half in the road, half on the sidewalk, a samba band was beating its drums at full strength in the strong Saturday morning sunlight. At their center was an old pickup truck casually decorated with palm fronds, some of which had been dyed purple and red. Seated in the back of the pickup truck, Facing backward was a huge black papier-mâché monster. Its arms were out to embrace. Its eyes were big and shiny. Its smile was friendly. A girl dressed only in a G-string and pasties sat on the monster's head, her legs dropping over its face. Of course, she had gorgeous legs and a flat belly and full breasts. Her long black hair fell over her face. On the ground near the truck, a tall man in a long black evening gown and cherry-red face rouge danced wildly to the drums. A 9-year-old girl also danced in a black evening gown while puffing a cigarette. A bare-legged middle-aged man danced while holding his briefcase. Perhaps there were 50 or 60 people dancing around the band.
"Bum, bum, patticum, bum," Tonino said.
Fletch tossed his plastic-liter bottle of water onto the back seat of the Galaxy.
"Señor Barreto," the doorman said quietly.
In one swift motion, Tito pulled Fletch's tennis shirt over his head and off him. Orlando put his forefinger against Fletch's chest.
"Look, skin."
"He has skin?" Norival asked, looking.
Tito ground a couple of knuckles into Fletch's back.
"Muscle."
"He is there?" Norival asked. "Really there?"
"Señor Barreto," the doorman said.
"Mr. Fletcher."
"Bum, bum," Tonino said. Behind the doorman, tall, stately in her white gown, big-eyed Idolino Barreto came through the crowd. On each side of her, she had a child by the hand. 3 older children were in her wake. The children were clean enough, but the jerseys on the girls were too big or too small. Below his shorts, from above his knee, the 10-year-old boy had a wooden leg.
"Gianni Barreto!"
the hag shrieked over the sound of the samba band.
"Ah," Tonino said solemnly, "your wife."
The doorman stood back. Tito handed Fletch his shirt rolled up into a ball. Fletch threw it into the car. The old woman cackled rapidly. She was presenting the children to him.
"She says they are your great-grandchildren, Gianni," Tito said. "Are you catching their names?"
"The boy is called Gianni."
Fletch put his hand on the head of one of the small girls. At first, Idolino Barreto smiled. As Fletch ducked into the back seat of the black Galaxy, her voice became shrill. She pressed forward. Tonino got into the driver's seat.
"Aren't you going to ask your wife if you may go gambling?"
Orlando got into the front passenger seat. Entering from the other side, Tito sat in the middle beside Fletch. Norival sat near the left window of the back seat. Fletch handed 2 of the children money through his back window. Tonino started the car.
"Bum, bum," he said.
As the car rolled forward, the hag's face continued to fill Fletch's window. Her shrieking voice filled the car.
"Ah, wives," Tito said.
Soon the car bumped off the sidewalk and got into traffic on the Avenida. Through the rearview mirror, Tonino was staring at Fletch. There were many cans of beer on the floor of the back seat of the car.
"Bum, bum, particular bum,"
Tonino said, driving through the traffic.
"Carnival."
In the front seat, Orlando stretched.
"How nice."
Tonino shook his head sadly.
"Think of driving off and leaving your wife and great-grandchildren that way, to go gambling. What is the younger generation coming to?"
"Un chopino?"
Norival held out a can of beer to Fletch.
"Not yet."
Stuck in traffic, Norival handed the beer through the window to a child no more than 12. Then he opened one for himself. In the traffic near them was a big modern bus. All that could be seen through the windows of the bus were bare brown upper torsos, moving like fish in a net, the arms flailing the insides of the bus, the feet apparently stomping the floor with the rhythm, the faces raised in some song. The bus was being used as a drum, being played from the inside by more than 100 fists, more than 100 feet. The buses being used as a drum from the inside did not seem to impair its modern beauty or impede its rollicking progress through the traffic. Finally, the Galaxy turned into a side street and picked up speed for a short way until they came to another samba band almost clogging the street. A small 70-year-old lady, all by herself, dressed in a red dress and red shoes, a red plastic handbag hanging from one forearm, danced to that band, taking perfect small steps with perfect dignity. Creeping the car past the samba band, Tonino shouted through the window at them,
"Bum, bum, patticum, bum!"
Prugerondom!
Some of the people who heard him waved. Bum bum paticum prugerondom, Fletch tried to say. What's that?
An old carnival song, Tito said, picking a beer off the floor.
Norivala was swallowing his third beer since getting into the car.
What does it mean?
Nothing. After a while, they were free of the city, and the car began climbing the narrow, twisting mountain roads. Behind the walls and hedges were suburban homes. The higher they climbed, the more expensive were the houses. Shortly, Norival had to be let out to water some of the bushes. Then he started another beer. Occasionally, through the heavy green growth, the hedges, Fletch caught glimpses of Christ the Redeemer, 30 meters tall, over 1,000 tons heavy, a half mile in the sky above Rio on Corcovado, arms stretched wide to welcome and embrace the whole world. Enough times, Fletch had heard the story of the Argentine fisherman who spent days outside Bahia de Guanabara waiting for the statue to wave him in. Finally, he sailed his catch of fish home to Argentina. At one point, Tonino said in English, "You are not here long before you discover Brazilian music is not only the bossa nova of Vinicius de Moraes and Tom Jobim."
"That is for export." Norival licked the lid of his beer can.
"Perhaps Brazilian music is too complicated for others to understand," Tito said. "The melody, too, comes from the drums," Fletch said. "People are not used to listening to the drums for melody." For the most part, the tap dancers discussed which samba school would win the carnival parade. This matter is discussed in Brazil as fervently, as passionately as who will win the World Football Cup or the presidential election is discussed in other parts of the world. Each of the big favelas, slums in Rio de Janeiro, presents a finished samba school for the carnival parade, complete with a newly written song and huge, ornate, intricate floats. Hundreds of trained, practiced drummers, brilliant matching costumes for thousands of people. The carnival parade is the total competition of sound, melody, lyrics, rhythm. Sights, the stately floats, dazzling costumes, the physical beauty of the people dancing from that favela, the magic quickness of the kick dancers, originality and vitality, minds and hearts of the people of each of the slums. All the people in each favela work all the year on their favela's presentation, being careful that their song for that year is well written, then spending many nights and every weekend practicing it, playing it, singing it, dancing it, promoting it in the streets, designing and making each of the costumes for men and women, each more complicated than a wedding garment, by hand, designing and building their samba school float, usually as big as a mansion. Every spare moment and every spare crucero goes into making each favela's presentation as beautiful, as stunning to the ear and the eye, the mind and the heart, as exciting as possible. And the competition is most strictly judged, and therefore, of course, always the subject of much controversy. As Fletch heard the tap dancers discuss these matters, which school had the best song for this year, possibly the best costumes and floats, as they knew of them, the best drummers and dancers, which did win and might have won last year, the year before, he heard the names and snatches of the songs that were now being heard everywhere, on the streets, from the radio and television. Months before Carnival, the new song of each samba school is offered the people like a campaign pledge and promoted like a political platform or an advertising slogan. The tap dancers discussed the various samba schools one by one, from the oldest, Mangueira, to one of the newest, Imperio da Tijuca, from one of the more traditional, Salgueiro, to the overpowering drum section of Mocidade Independente Padre Miguel. Tonino seemed to think this year's winner would be Portela, judging the song that school was offering and what he knew of the costumes. Orlando thought Imperatriz Leopoldinense had the better song. Tito agreed with Tonino about Portela. Norival drank his beer, belched, and just said, "Beija Flor." Fletch wiped the sweat off his skin with his rolled-up shirt. Breaking into English, Tonino said, looking through the rearview mirror, "Fletch, you should hope for Santos Lima to win."
"Then I do."
Leaning forward, Norival gave Fletch a lopsided look. "But why should I?"
"You used to live there. That was your place. That is where Janio Barreto lived and was murdered."
For a moment, there was silence in the car. Then Orlando began humming the song offered this year by Imperio da Tijuca.
Orlando! Tonino!
In the mountains, they had driven down a deeply shaded drive and pulled into the sunlight-filled parking area in front of an old run-down plantation house. Immediately there appeared on the front porch of the house an enormous woman, a good 300 pounds, her arms out in either greeting or sufferance, in the identical posture of Christ the Redeemer.
"Good Lord," Fletch said when he saw her through the car window.
Orlando and Tonino had gotten out of the front seat and opened the back doors. The other side of the car, clearly Norival did not care whether he moved. Fletch got out his side of the car. The mountain air was cooler on his skin, but still the sun was biting. Around the corner of the house appeared a skinny young teenage girl dressed only in shorts. Her eyes seemed as sunken as in a skeleton's skull.
"Tito?"
the woman shouted. Tito got out of the car, grinning. The other side of the car, Norival lumbered out, went quickly to the bushes not far away, and relieved himself. Then behind the enormous woman, imitating a statue, there appeared a real statue, a mulatta, a girl 6'4" easily, perfectly proportioned, an amazing example of humanity. Her shoulders were broad, her waist narrow, her legs long. Each of her breasts was as large and as full as an interior Brazilian mountain seen from the air. Each of her eyes was bigger than a fist and darker than a moonless night. Her black hair was long and flowing. Her skin was the color and texture of flowing copper. Dressed only in slit shorts and high-heeled shoes, she moved like a goddess in no great hurry to go out and sow the seeds of humanity upon a field. This amazing creature, this animate statue, smiled at them. Fletch gulped.
"You brought me someone new," the fat older woman yelled in English. "Is he North American? He is so beautiful." "He has special problems, Dona Jurema," Tonino laughed. "He has special needs."
"My God," Fletch said. "Where am I?" Tito punched Fletch's bicep.
"At a different height in heaven."
Chapter 12.
"Tricked," Fletch said. "A little place we know in the mountains. You guys have brought me to a brothel."
Towels wrapped around their waists, he and Tonino were sitting in long chairs in the shade near the swimming pool. The back of the plantation house was even more dilapidated than the front. Paint was thin and chipped. The back door was lopsided on its hinges. The flower borders had gone years untended. Lilies grew in the swimming pool.
"Very relaxing," Tonino said. "I did say it was very relaxing."
"So why do the well-loved tap dancers need a brothel?"
"Everyone needs a few uncomplicated relationships, no? To relax."
They had entered the plantation house, each being fondled by the massive Dona Jurema as he passed her, her laugh volcanic, her fat layered like lava. The younger woman, Eva, smiling happily, stood aside, looking even more Amazonian inside the house. They had crossed the scarred foyer, gone through a large, vomit-smelling dark ballroom turned into a tavern, and out the back door. Coming again into the sunlight, each of the tap dancers dropped his shorts and plunged into the swimming pool. With the encouragement of Dona Jurema and the smiles of Eva, Fletch had followed suit. There were 5 white towels waiting for them when they came out of the pool. Their shorts had been piled neatly on a table near the back door. The skinny young teenage girl brought them a tray with 5 glasses of cachaça and a sugar bowl. Norival downed his cachaça in a gulp, asked for another, and collapsed on a long chair on the long side of the pool. Tito was doing disciplined laps in the pool, stroking through the lily pads. Orlando went into the house.
"What is that new North American verb?" Tonino asked.
"Interact. It is tiresome having always to interact, especially with women. The women here do not expect anything so profound as interaction."
Dona Jurema came through the back door and let herself down the steps like a big bag of glass.
"So good of you to come, Tonino," she said. "Not many of the girls are up. Ah, it's a hot day. We had a busy night. We will have lunch for you in a while."
"This man," Tonino put his hands on Fletcher's forearm. This man has special needs.
Jorema beamed at Fletch.
It would be a sin if he is having difficulties.
He is not having difficulties, I think, Tonino said. Are you, Fletch?
Only with the cachaça.
He put his glass down on the burned-out grass.
A special need I'm sure you can satisfy, Jorema.
Arms akimbo, the woman shrugged her shoulders. It was a seismic upheaval.
We can satisfy any need. Why, an Air Force general we had here.
Tonino, Fletch said, I have no special needs.
But you do, Tonino said. A very special need. I am your friend. It is important to me that your special need be fulfilled.
I need sleep, Fletch said, leaning back in his chair, closing his eyes.
I know what you need.
Solemnly, Tonino said,
My friend needs a corpse.
Fletch's eyes popped open. His head snapped up.
What? I said you need a corpse for the purpose of copulation.
To Jorema, he said,
My friend has the great need to make love to a corpse.
Jorema was not laughing. She was answering Tonino in rapid Portuguese. Her eyes, her face, her voice bespoke someone doing business.
Because, Tonino said, my friend is a corpse, partly a corpse. Part of him has not had a woman in 47 years. Clearly, if we are to get the truth from him, his perispirit must be awakened.
Tonino, Fletch said.
It is true, Tonino said to Jorema.
Behind Fletch's long chair, Jorema bent over. She put her hands on his breasts and put at least part of her weight on them. Pressing hard, she ran her hands all the way down to his stomach, under his towel, to his pelvis, then raised her hands. She erupted in laughter.
He seems alive. If the other part of him is as healthy...
A cool breeze blew over Fletch. He resettled his towel.
You see the problem, Tonino said with dignity. Now, how can you help my friend?
Tonino, stop it. You're gross.
A corpse for my friend? Someone young, dead, and pretty?
Tonino, this isn't funny.
Probably by Tuesday, Jorema said. There are always such corpses available during carnival.
Find a good one, Tonino said. Jorema waddled a short distance. Speaking to Tonino in Portuguese, incredibly enough, she stooped over and picked a weed out of the burned grass. Her face flushed. She then lifted herself up the back stairs and into the house.
Tuesday, Tonino said. She'll have one for you Tuesday.
Tonino, I hope this is another of your jokes. Abruptly, in the same tone of voice, Tonino said,
Your friend, Teodomiro da Costa, is to be respected.
I met with him this morning. Fletch watched the sunlight flashing on Tito's shoulders as he swam. He had advice for me, which I respect, especially at the moment.
In this country, 70% of the business is run by the government, you see. To do well on your own, as Teo has, is to do very well indeed. Now tell me, in North America, there is a car which has what is called a slant six engine. Can you describe it to me, please?
Fletch told Tonino what he understood of the slant six engine and that it had an especially long life. Sitting on Saturday morning in the mountains above Rio de Janeiro, looking out into the sunlight, he felt his eyes crossing. He had not had that much of the cachaça. One moment, Tonino was talking seriously of necrophilia, and the next just as seriously about a slant six car engine. The young girl brought Norival his third cachaça.
Ah, Tonino said. Norival is an arigo. A simpleton, a boor, but a good fellow. If he were not from a rich, important family, he would be an arigo. His brother... Adroaldo Passarino is the same, exactly like him in every way. Look the same, act the same. His father has sent Adroaldo to school in Switzerland in hopes there will be someone in the family this generation less than simple. Arrigo.
Tito climbed out of the pool and, not drying himself, dropped naked belly down on the grass. In high seriousness and in great detail, Tonino then wanted to know about this new robot he had read about in Time magazine, supposedly capable of understanding and obeying 100,000 different orders. Designed in Milan, manufactured in Phoenix with Japanese parts. What was the nature of the computer which ran it? How were the joints designed, and how many were there? What would the robot say when given conflicting orders? Would the robot know, better than a person, when it is breaking down? In his towel, holding a fresh glass of cachaça, Orlando stood on the back steps of the plantation house. He sang. Of the four tap dancers, Orlando's muscles were the heaviest. His voice was deep, and he sang well.
O canto de mina gente, assediando meu curaçao, semente que a arte germinou, e o tempo temperou. Amor, o amor, como é gostoso amar.
Norival raised his head from his long chair and hissed. Even from a distance, it could be seen Norival was not focusing. His head dropped back.
Ah, the Arrigo never sobered from last night, Tonino said.
What's the song? Fletch asked.
An old carnival song. Let's see.
Tonino closed his eyes to translate. Fletch had been slow to see how long Tonino's lashes were. They rested on his cheeks.
My people's song makes my heart leap. The seed is sown by art and tempered by time. Love, love, how good it is to love.
That's a good song.
Oh, yes.
With his glass of cachaça, Orlando wandered down to where they were sitting.
Orlando, Tonino said, give Fletch a demonstration of capoeira, of kick dancing. You and Tito, make it good, kill each other.
Raising his head beside the pool, Tito said,
You, Tonino. Perform for the gods, Tonino said.
Orlando looked into his glass.
I've had a drink. You won't hurt each other, Tonino said. You and Orlando, Tito said from the grass. It is important Janio sees capoeira from close up, Tonino said. So he will remember.
Glass still in hand, Orlando went to Tito and with his bare feet stood on Tito's ass. Standing thus, he drained his glass, leaned over, and put it on the grass. Then he began to walk slowly up Tito's back.
I can't breathe, Tito said.
And you can't talk? Tonino asked.
I can't talk either.
Then he wriggled free, spilling Orlando to the side, and jumped to his feet. In a wide arc, he swung his right foot, aiming for Orlando's head. Orlando ducked successfully, turned sideways and slammed his instep into Tito's side, against his rib cage. Orlando's towel dropped.
Wake up, Orlando said.
In a short moment, Tito and Orlando had the rhythm of it, had each other's rhythm. Gracefully, viciously, rhythmically, as if to the beating of drums, with fantastic speed, they were aiming kicks at each other's heads, shoulders, stomachs, crotches, knees, each kick coming within a hair's breadth of connecting, narrowly ducking, sidestepping each other, turning and swirling, their legs straight and their legs bent, their muscles tight and their muscles loose, their fronts and their backs flashing in the sunlight, the hair on their heads seeming to have to hurry up to keep with this frantic movement. With this fast, graceful dance, easily they could have killed each other. Eva had come onto the porch to watch. Her eyes flashed. A few faces of other women appeared in the upper windows of the plantation house. Everyone loves the tap dancers. They're sleek.
Remember, Tonino was saying, a skill developed by the young male slaves in defense against their masters.